This week, gold and silver staged a stealth rally, along with the NASDAQ, which reached a new record, as investors ignored the quarter-point rate hike, focusing instead on dovish comments from the Fed. Well, welcome everyone. Just great to be back with you this weekend. Chris Waltzik here with two all-new guest interviews, and we just completed a move to a new studio location and appreciate your patience with us over the last few weeks. Well, in just 3 months, the yellow metal up $100 this year, while silver is approaching $2. Peter Grandich, Wall Street legend, notes he hasn't been this bullish in two decades on gold. We discussed the FOMC meeting where concerns over domestic inflation and an overheating economy led officials to raise rates a quarter point this week, but still the precious metal sector moved sharply higher and the greenback declined as traders viewed the Fed's comments as somewhat dovish. Peter Grandich thinks that once the equities, greenback, and energy markets roll over for good, most of the funds will be directed to the precious metals sector, a confluence of events catapulting our favorite indexes to new highs. And we also discuss that several Western U.S. states are adding legislation that makes gold and silver legal tender, removing state capital gains taxes. Then, and a bit off topic, but we talk about Edward Snowden's announcement. He outlines an interesting hypothesis regarding extraterrestrial communications, while the supposed experts say they can't be out there simply because we haven't heard from them. He says we have heard from them, but we just don't understand their encryption. Then Bob Hoy, a favorite of the show, rejoins us with market commentary from a historical perspective. We discuss the cryptocurrency Bitcoin and its revolution. Now that it's eclipsed even the price of gold for the first time, the cryptocurrency is divisible down to the 100 millionth of a Bitcoin. That's right, a Satoshi, the first name of the creator of Bitcoins. And so no matter how high the price may go, Bitcoins can always be useful for a purchase of almost any increment or transaction. The bifurcation gives you speculation as well as monetary value. We also discuss the quantum computer, or qubits, CERN, and just how the quantum computer utilizes parallel universes to make formerly impossible calculations simple. An outdated quantum computer was reportedly faster than all 7 billion human minds combined, and that was just the Model T. And then Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest must-hear report. We'd like for you to call into our hotline with your questions and comments, 641-715-3900, the mailbox number 514049. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Visibility virtually unlimited over the precious metals sector as investors brushed off the quarter point rate hike on Wednesday, focusing instead on dovish comments, which sent the U.S. dollar sharply lower. Gold added $29, about 2%, finishing at $12.30, while silver added half a dollar, 3%, ending at $17.41 an ounce. The precious metals XAU shares added 2.75 points, finishing at $82.50, and even black gold added about 82 cents. Just shy of 2% at $49.30 a barrel. Well, the top story pushing the yellow metal higher by 2% after the Fed decision this week was dovish talk from policymakers, which in turn sent the greenback reeling. The Fed raised the U.S. benchmark overnight lending rate a quarter point on Wednesday as expected, while nevertheless lower than expected stimulus measures from Washington, D.C. made traders question if the Fed will really have the chutzpah to pull the trigger on three more rates in 2017. Proposed tax cuts and fiscal spending plans have been continually postponed as officials work through the details of the proposed policies. In related news, another highly positive indication from gold producers, including Newmont Mining and Barrick Gold, which registered the best weekly gain of the year. According to the chief market analyst at a UK think tank, the gold miner rally has much more room to go and will primarily be due to solid expectations from gold. Precious metals bottom line. As noted in the last report, investors have factored in this week's rate hike and a price floor materialized as expected. The onus now is firmly on the bulls to overcome considerable resistance in the weekly charts. Once that comes to pass, at the 200 period moving average, I think the rally of 2017 should lead the market sharply higher. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, partly sunny skies appeared over the New York Stock Exchange. Although higher rates hurt corporate profits, investors viewed the lack of hawkish comments by policymakers to indicate some indecision on further rate hikes. By Friday's close, the Dow Jones Industrials added 12 points, finishing at 2914. The S&P 500 picked up 6, ending at 2378, while the NASDAQ, though, closed at a new all-time record weekly high, adding 40 points at 5901. Lastly, the Bitcoin ETF GBTC, however, recoiled from recent highs, dropping to 118 off 17 points, about 13% for the week. Meanwhile, despite the rate hike, technology stocks shrugged it all off, continuing to lead the market, according to one technical analyst who specifically recommends the shares of Skywork Solutions. The S&P 500 technology sector on Wednesday also hit its highest level since early 2000. Apple boosted the sector, hitting records on Wednesday, a regular pick of my Alpha Stocks newsletter, and closed about 1% higher. And a top CNBC analyst noted that semiconductors, including Skywork Solutions, were up about 33% this year, and one of their favorite ideas. They like the chip maker, and it's also an Apple computer supplier. Bottom line on equities. Well, despite records in the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ, the greed to fear index actually plunged into the fearful category this week. That's just a perfect world for investors and traders alike, suggesting that the herd is wrong and further momentum to the upside could come to pass, with the Dow eventually eclipsing even 22,000. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek Radio. We'd like for you to stay with us. Bob Hoy has advised institutional clients 3 decades. Welcome back.
Hi, Chris. Good to be with you.
Great to have you back. And you were looking out the palatial estate, one of the many windows.
It's a very pleasant condo, and it's only about 1,000 feet away from a drop-off down to the ocean. And there's a verge of, mainly evergreen trees there. And one of them is the biggest one is sort of had the top parts blasted off, so there's just stub branches sticking out. And there is a pair of eagles that hang out there. So oftentimes they'll be sitting on those snags side by side, or one will be on one side of the snag and the one the other. But at the moment, there's one there now just hanging out.
I wonder if they are either golden eagles, bald, or osprey.
They're a golden eagle, without a doubt, because I've seen them flying back and forth. And sometimes there's a red-tailed hawk around, and I have seen an osprey. Mainly, it's this one snag tree that is so visible from my office window. So life is good.
We like that perspective. So people listening to your voice today have, from all over the world, gained insights into different locales and the aesthetics of different areas. It's always great to hear. Interesting little anecdote here, or maybe not so interesting. I don't know. But my family had a very nice 2-acre lake place out on a peninsula growing up. One day, you know, in my 20s, and just walking in the early evening, and I just see this giant pair of wings over my head, and I'm thinking, what is this? Is a, you know, one of these vampire bats that are enormous? And it really was a, I believe, either an osprey, which I don't think they're indigenous to the Alabama area, or a golden eagle. It had to be, because it was not a buzzard. They call vultures buzzards. It was not, certainly not a falcon. I mean, falcons are tiny. This had to be a four to five foot wingspan, I would say, at least. It was just, it was sort of an awe-inspiring moment.
Oh, they can be. Now, when I noticed these eagles here, I looked them up and Googled them, and the female of the eagle species is much larger than the male, and I never knew that.
You know, that's interesting because, you know, the kestrel, I believe it's a smaller of the hawk family. Kestrel female is considerably larger than the male.
It must run with those raptors, aren't they called, the ones with the hooked beak? Yeah.
But you are right, in the reptile kingdom, that is oftentimes the case. And today, a lot of topicality, but what I wanted to bring up for some fresh perspective from Bob Hoy is we had a good friend of the show. He's second time on our show, and that's Andrew McGuire, a keen intellect. I'm sure you can relate. relate to that. But it was a great opportunity to listen, pick the brains of this individual who is so really ensconced in the center of the London gold and silver market. He's not an observer like so many of us, proud of our, you know, ability to sort of dissect all the pieces and bring it together in one big analysis, manipulation story. And I know that you will have a different perspective because you feel a bit more dubious regarding this idea that markets are manipulated, that that's maybe not the thing we should be focusing on.
Less than an hour ago, we're talking to my colleague Ross Clark about that and the supposed LIBOR manipulation. But, oh, decades ago, I used to be pretty close to some of the big gold mining companies and their marketing guys, and they were plugged into the London market. And I think the thing you can say is at any given time, there may be a couple of dealers who would like to push the move a little further. Doesn't matter whether it's up or down. And I think that's the case probably in most metals, and the case in LIBOR, where during the crisis in 2009, the trading desks that were trying to make a market in LIBOR in one of the worst collapses since the 1930s. And, of course, they were putting up bids and offers and, you know, seeking levels. And then afterwards, the very ambitious government people decided they could make some money out of that. So they declared that what the traders were doing in trying to set a market were criminals, and they imposed large fines. And, of course, the trading houses had no choice but to go along with it. Now, manipulations of the precious metals market, I have a quip that in the case of macroeconomic, when a forecast on GDP doesn't work out, they already have an intellectual out. It's called an exogenous event. They couldn't predict it, and that's why their model didn't work. And then, and even going way back further, policymakers, and you'd have a boom, say, in the 70s that would get pretty strong. And then they said it was an overshoot of policy, and it'd be followed by a recession that would get severe, and then they called that an undershoot of policy. And then you have the guys who try to do supply-demand analysis and figure out the price of silver or the price of gold, and it is a standard response. When their carefully worked out forecasts don't work, immediately it's conspiracy. It's so laughable. I prefer to work with the history of metals and price changes relative to credit conditions, and then use technical on the actual price itself. And as a matter of fact, I just finished writing for today's piece, which will come out later, that the gold-silver ratio has been, well, it dropped down to about 69 a few weeks ago, and then it popped up, and then it dropped down again. And I have found that it's best to let the metal prices tell you what's going on rather than trying to tell the metal prices what they should be doing. So anyways, when the gold-silver ratio gets choppy, whatever the move has been in the credit markets is getting prepared to change. So that began a couple of weeks ago. And then from the low of 69 or whatever it was, we concluded that if it gets through 71, where the 50-day moving average and the 200-day moving averages, they're both close together at about 71, that would start an uptrend. Well, it's at 71 today, so it's attempting to start this uptrend. And then if you look at the past at least 300 years of price history, when the gold-silver ratio goes up, it anticipates distress in the credit markets. And it's very consistent. And how, even in today's world in, say, the last 20, 30 years or so, I've often wondered who is actually watching both metals, doing the ratio, and then moving in the credit markets. And it's beyond me, but at any rate, we're now got to move in the gold-silver ratio that is trying to instruct us, including many metals analysts, that we're going to go into a credit storm. And we also got that backed up with the action in the low-grade bonds, like the high-yield, the HYG. It has been an absolutely outstanding rally for the price of junk bonds since the panic out a year ago in January, February, when price of crude collapsed to 26. So anyways, the rally in HYG has been fabulous. And as of this week, it's reached a very high RSI, on the daily RSI. It's up to, well, it's almost 77, so let's call it 77. The history of that one for the last decade is that RSI getting up to the 76, 77 level has been followed by a high in the stock market by about 3 weeks. So we're getting that now, and actually the stock market is weak. There was an instant where it was instantaneous, but on some of the highs, like in 2007 and 2008, it led the high for that year. Let's go back to 2007. By 3 weeks. Then on the rebound into May of 2008, that high was led by this action in the HYG by about 3 weeks. So it looks like the stock market could go down. And then, of course, with the junk bonds reaching such a high RSI, they're going to go down in price as well. And then, of course, we all know about the link between a good portion of the junk bond market that has been issued is petroleum in the oil and gas industry. So now this week you've got crude oil heading down, and that is going to do a number on junk bond prices, and the yields will go up and spreads relative to treasuries will widen. So it looks like a reversal from good times in the credit markets is earned and could be starting. And that is also tied to all of a sudden you're getting some volatility in the gold-silver ratio. So it's a very interesting week, Chris.
It is an interesting week, and I'm so glad you brought up this concept of a potential market top. As we were sitting right here, our good friend Arch Crawford from Arizona, formerly a Wall Street, something of a legend in his own time, and he wants to talk about the potential for a big market sell signal. He has made just a fortune selling.
Oh, yeah, I've met Arch a few times. Well, do say hello to him, because he used to speak at the Committee for Monetary Research and Education dinners in Manhattan, and we've had dinner and lunch together. I like it. So say hello to Arch. He's a good guy.
He's actually from this general area. His family still lives here. So he's been just a great help to the show, like yourself, for years. But he's on board with you. And I'd like to shift gears just for a moment, another little mini fugue, if you will, to interject something other than just finance and economics into the show from time to time. And I think it adds some character. And you have an interesting background, or something of a scientist. If I remember correctly, you're either a geophysicist, or at least you studied physics, I believe, as an undergraduate, maybe a graduate. You may have heard, and I'm sure most of our listeners are familiar with CERN. Okay, now this is the world's largest super collider. People used to refer to as atom smasher or a particle accelerator. There's so many different terms now. 300 feet underground beneath France, the border of France and Switzerland. So it actually is 20 miles long, some remarkable length, a giant oval, if you will, several ovals actually. So it's a big particle accelerator with zillions of electromagnets sending small neutrons, protons, and muons and things like that. It above light speed, in some cases, believe it or not, they believe, and smashing them together, trying to recreate initial conditions of the universe, as well as to maybe decipher or uncover quantum level particles. The grand prize is the Higgs boson, the glue of the universe, if you will, the backbone of gravity. Okay, so I wanted to bring this up because I just stumbled onto all this information, many, many hours of seminars by an individual. He matriculated at Berkeley before becoming an EMT, of all things, sidetracked by life. You know, life tends to do that to many bright folks. Einstein, you might recall, was a patent clerk for a while and nearly sold insurance, door-to-door insurance, because he just couldn't make ends meet. But this is, I think, a similar type. And he just spent 20, 30 years writing and researching cutting-edge physics and supercomputing and CERN. And he's come to the conclusion that they're using quantum computing at CERN. And I just wanted to bring this up because I know everyone is computer savvy listening to our voices. For folks who are just waking up to quantum computing, because that's really most people. So I would just give people the idea that it's accelerating much faster, their speeds of these quantum computers, than Moore's Law. Up to 3 to 4 times, doubling every year instead of every year and a half, or up to something like 8,000 qubits, which is the way they measure the speed of the quantum computers. And essentially, I want to just give a quick little overview, and then if you'd like to comment, that's fine. And if not, we'll move on to the next economic topic. Each qubit in these computers has access. This is not sci-fi or even sci-fact. I mean, this is bona fide physics, okay, quantum mechanics. Each qubit accesses a parallel universe. No, this is not hyperbole. I am prone to it. Nevertheless, it actually, according to the math, each one of these 8,000 qubits in the fastest computer they have right now, the NSA has one, NASA has one, the military complex has several, and now CERN, we believe, CERN has many. Well, each one has access to a parallel universe. And the way that it works is this. You know, the typical binary computer is 0 and 1. We all know this. On, off, plus, minus, day, night, that I think originated with the I Ching in China. And then Leibniz, you might remember, picked up on that and created his, instead of just accessing a one or a zero, the whole idea of probability, it has to be some percentage between one and zero. Access any state vis-a-vis entanglement or spooky action at a distance, Einstein. One of those probabilities within that one in zero. Okay, so bottom line, make this quick. Let's wrap this all up. What does it mean? Let's say you have 1,000 different prime numbers to factor. Okay, in order to break encryption. And the modern day binary computer has to go through one at a time. Supercomputers do it very quickly, but it might take a week, a month, or a year. A quantum computer with 8,000 can factor 8,000 different problems at once. You see, so it doesn't go through it from top to bottom. It literally goes through the list at once. And what might have taken a year now takes 2 minutes. Accessing these parallel universes at the string level, it's going to change the world. And I just wanted to see if you had any interest in CERN or Higgs boson or any of this at all.
I would have to sit down and get refreshed in it. But when you started talking about CERN, I thought you were going to lead into the work they've done on cosmic rays and creating more cloud cover. So I thought you were going to go into climate stuff, but
let's move on now to Bitcoin in the context of, you know, these markets. We don't expect anybody to be an expert on Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies. I'm a big fan. Bitcoin, I'm sure you heard, crossed with the gold market. It actually reached parity, if you will, with the yellow metal. And this, I think, is a substantial event. I mean, there's only one ETF currently. You mentioned an ETF, high yield bonds. I think it's GBTC, a recommended pick on my Alpha Stocks newsletter now for many months, and it's done nothing but go up since then, Bitcoin. And it really is about the only convenient way that I've ever found for an investor to get involved with Bitcoins. Take it from someone who's had to use it many times over the past few years. Even today, it's astoundingly difficult. GBTC makes it easy. And I'd like your thoughts on the significance of cryptocurrencies and maybe in the context of the gold market.
The financial markets need a sound currency, one that ambitious governments can't meddle with. And I believe at some time it will get one. But it has to be relatively constant. These bitcoins that are around now, they can bid them up to horrendous prices, which is not what you want. I mean, it becomes a speculative item.
This is something that folks who haven't actually used cryptocurrencies regularly, it's very difficult to wrap your mind around. The price really doesn't matter. Let's say you want to buy a car from someone using bitcoins, and you want to keep the transaction as anonymous as possible. You go to a dealer, you pay them $5,000 in U.S. currency, and then for a small fraction of a fee, you receive approximately, you might have to give them $5,100, you receive $5,000 of the current Bitcoin price. So even if Bitcoin goes to $1 million tomorrow, it can be chopped down into such small increments, which no other currency that I'm aware of that can happen. I mean, a penny, you know, is about as low as you can go in U.S. currency. But we can go to a Satoshi, 100 millionth. That aspect of the Bitcoin revolution is going to change everything. It's a dualistic quality. On the one hand, you have that speculative aspect that you've outlined so well. There's a dislocation.
There's an ongoing constant in there, which you've explained so well.
And I think that this is going to facilitate a whole new global economy. And I even think, unfortunately, our officials, policymakers, are waking up to that. And I'm afraid they're going.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, Chris, what you get in each, like 2007 was the great bubble, and you had the great crash that followed, which was the worst contraction since the 1930s. Now, what you get in a post-bubble world, which can last for 20, 25 years until you correct out all the excesses in the credit markets, is a change away from collectivism and regionalism, and then the action away from centralism towards the individual. And this is what the reform is that's going on now. I've called it the American Spring. And in England, it was Brexit. And this is going to be irresistible. So bigger. Well, you know, my thesis that there have been three great experiments in authoritarian government in the senior economy. The third century in Rome, they funded it with inflation, currency depreciation. Then the 16th century, where the main organization that existed was the church, and it was corrupted by the bureaucrats. And then there was a great reformation that threw that off. And then now you've had the experiment running through the 20th century and continuing. But it's ending action here now. But one of the things is that the Federal Reserve has been corrupted to provide unlimited funding to an experiment in unlimited government. And the Wall Street and the apparatus of government, the establishment, so to speak, all believe that they can keep the series of bubbles going. They know that from time to time a bubble's going to break, but they think they can keep bubbles going forever. So they think they've got a perpetual motion funding machine for the experiment in unlimited government. But the politics is changing very quickly, similar to previous examples, and any break in the financial market. Now, this stock bubble's gone on for 8 years. The bubble in bonds in Treasury side ended in July last year, and as of this week, we now have the excessive readings on junk bonds that we got on Treasuries last summer. So this is where it's particularly fascinating to me, is because if you get a credit contraction going on, it's going to deny the ability of the Federal Reserve to fund the state. And the problem now with the people trying to get control of the government is that they know that take-home pay, average person, for the last 25 years is not advanced. And the reason why it hasn't advanced is because the government's taken the lolly. So the uprising, I call it the popular uprising, and have also called it the American Spring, will be successful. And one of the things that will make it successful will be the next credit contraction, because the Federal Reserve and the state that backs it will lose credibility. huge credibility.
Let's talk about the credit contraction, because I think that's a great segue into my next question for you. Topic. I mean, look at our comments from Federal Reserve Chairwoman Janet Yellen. You know, interest rate increases likely. There's a big shift in the rate stance. I would say it was a stealth shift. It looks as though, to me, as though it was almost a trap being set by policymakers. I mean, the Fed funds futures contracts that were caught wildly off guard last week, and suddenly we move way up from June or July on a rate hike. This is a sea change in their stance. You're not a big believer in their ability to manipulate rates. Like so many of our guests, you pointed out that they follow the yield curve. They don't actually impact it all that much or affect it. I'd like your thoughts, though, on just what you think is going through the minds. Dare you even try?
I have a vision, a Persian cat standing back to the with its back to the wind and getting flustered. They accept the central banking system, but anybody with any sense of common sense left has got to be looking at their theories that they expand credit and you get this much GDP growth. No. They probably now know that all of that pushing, all the QE stuff, all of the bond buying, all it did is create the biggest bubble in bond history, and treasuries have come apart. And now you've got the big bubble in junk bonds ending. So the window on their ability to get money out is closing. And so this is now the other part that the state has been promoting is that the boast that they can manage an economy, of course, has been silly. And the one that they can manage the temperature of the planet is beyond imagination. No bureaucrat in 10,000 years of history has ever imagined that they can control the climate. So there's the two big boasts of big government. Is that they can manage the economy. The credit markets are about to put that one down. And then the other one is that they can manage the temperature of the planet. And we're into a solar minimum whereby you've been associated with cooling periods in history. The last one, of course, was the Little Ice Age that prevailed from the 1400s to the 1800s, with the coldest being around 1700. And now we're going back into, it could be, some solar physicists are saying it could be a grand solar minimum. And as I said, the last grand solar minimum was the Little Ice Age, was the Maunder minimum. So the two big promotions of government are about to be seen to fail. Chris, it is so exciting. I can't believe it. I tell people that to be alive and alert and watching this as it happens is a privilege. It's wonderful. I just look at my screen here, and while we've been talking for the last 20 minutes, the gold-silver ratio has jumped from 70.6 to 71.6. So a full point. It's gapped up. And that is a fairly big move for the ratio. So it's heading up, and it's saying that there's financial pressures are developing.
Why don't you tell people more about the type of services you provide?
Yeah, well, we cover credit markets. This is the curve, the spreads, actual changes in bond prices, currencies, metal prices, stock markets. We make a combination of historical approach plus, I would say, some of the best technical research that is available. You can get it under institutionaladvisors.com or just Google my name and it all comes up, BOBHOYE. And Chris, it's always good to be with you because you can sure throw some stuff at me that I've never heard of before.
Bob Hoy, always fun.
Indeed. Anytime, Chris. Very good.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Peter Grandich joins us today on a very important day for our investors and traders alike.
Great to be here, Chris. You are correct. The markets have just closed. As I think everybody expected, we had a hike in the Fed rate. I think the chat so far from Yellen after that has given people belief that any thought, which I was not in the camp of, that there was going to be substantially strong and aggressive interest rate rises, basically from what she said and what you can read in the minutes, is not going to happen. And I think that was all the gold price needed to spike up after, you know, the COMEX closed. And I think it's clear sailing, barring any unforeseen thing that, you know, sometimes comes out of left field when it comes to the gold market. I certainly think this set the stage now for gold to have a very strong 2017. So I'm quite happy, since my personal investments, and that's all that I take care of these days, is aggressively in the gold market.
Policymakers at the Fed are concerned that we have got an overheating economy, that things have just gotten ahead of themselves. Maybe people are a bit too optimistic with the new regime change in Washington.
They spoke about only two more times this year. And I have to tell you, with the Atlanta Fed now saying that first quarter GDP may have slipped under 1%, as I said in a writing this morning on my own blog, before any of the news came out from the Fed, that I think the surprise is going to be come 2018, the Fed is back to some sort of easing mode because the economy, both here and in the world at large, fell off the cliff. So with the Atlanta Fed talking about less than a 1% GDP growth, it would come as no surprise this time next year that the Federal Reserve is back into an easing mode because the economies here and across the world have slipped again. I think, again, that's one of the reasons that I feel so confident that the dollar is not going to get a lot stronger. The stock market, all systems are go for the gold market. I haven't been this bullish on gold for almost 20 years. I mean, again, my interest is strictly for my own. I don't manage any money. I'm not an advisory service anymore. I said to someone earlier today, Chris, that I think the argument should be is to all the folks that have predicted well under $1,000 by now, what went wrong? If you didn't get it by now, what is going to, you know, cause it to do that? So I think the least resistance for the gold market is up for the rest of 2000.
you know, I really like that reasoning, the logic you're using here. And I'm going to go out a little bit on a limb, maybe way out on a limb here with a parallel. You know, for decades, we've been asking, where are they? If there are other life forms in the universe, why haven't we heard of them? Why haven't we seen their sitcoms? And some of the sharpest minds said they can't be there because, frankly, we just haven't heard from them. But there's a brilliant man by the name of Edward Snowden that most people have heard of. And he just recently refuted the whole concept and said, hey, maybe we haven't heard from anybody else simply because we haven't been searching with the right algorithm, that they're using encryption, which only makes sense. Well, in similar fashion, I think you have identified the fact that nobody's looking at the metals. Nobody's interested. Everybody's focusing on, you know, the strong greenback, rate hikes and the rest of it. Plus, you know, where else are you going to put your money? I mean, stocks, you know, it doesn't make any logical sense. Give us an idea of what are some of the drivers you think that will continue to send the precious metals higher?
Well, I think there's a few things that are very positive about the gold market. First of all, somebody has been buying it. It's certainly not mainstream Wall Street or what I've coined for a couple decades, the don't worry, be happy crowd that makes up the lion's share of the financial service industry here in the U.S. They certainly have it, and that's good because eventually when their props, which is mostly the stocks, they'll still need to try to do business, and they will look at the gold market, and that's all gold's going to need. It's just a little bit of the money that's currently in financial assets to siphon off and come into it to get us back and get through the old highs. I expect those groups to be steeled down the road. I don't expect them yet to be in an aggressive way. I think the thing that's happening is that people are realizing that, hey, you know what? There really is no more safe currency. Even the dollar, which I really think rose because it was the least of all the evils. I think the other problem is, and I just see it budding very strongly, and that's the China, and there's going to be a debt problem there as well. So I just think across the board that gold will return to what it always has been, what's worked for thousands of years when other currencies came and went. It was an alternative to paper assets, and I just see that as a big benefactor here. And it's kind of like you talked about an analogy. It's kind of like you go into a fight. No one's giving this guy a chance. They're all saying stocks and bonds are going to cream gold and round one and round five, and suddenly it's round eight and nine, and they haven't knocked this guy out yet. And then suddenly he starts to come on, and I think that's where the gold market is now. We've heard for the last couple of years why it should be just so much below 1,000. Just every week I picked up a paper or read online somewhere of someone calling, you know, gold a relic and deserving, not deserving of anyone's attention. And yet here we are today. Really one of the biggest benefit of the news today was the gold market. Why? So I really think we have to start pinning the two of bears. And let's not forget also that perhaps one of the most overcrowded trade other than the stock market has been the U.S. dollar. Just any siphoning of that coming off a little bit, I think it's going to find its way into the gold market. So I'm very, very enthusiastic here. I don't sell it. I don't represent mining companies anymore. So there's not a prejudicial reason other than for my own hard-earned dollars, I think gold is a very prudent place to be at this point.
You know, I'd like to look at the opportunity in the precious metals from a different perspective. Recently, we've seen article after article talking about the officials, policymakers in Utah and in related Western states, including Texas, essentially saying gold and silver are legal tender. We don't want them to be taxed because when you tax real money, it forces people into worthless greenbacks. Into dollars. It's real money. We will accept it for your tax payments, and we will not have a state tax any longer on the sale, capital gains of gold and silver. You know, just like the upset we saw in the elections and Brexit and here in the United States, people are starting to recognize that this is sound money. This is what we should be using. I just hope the trend continues.
I think at the end of the day, people's concern about paper money is a growing concern. It may not be in the general public sector, but I think people astute and of wealth recognize it, and they've been a buyer of it. let's face it, central banks outside the United States have been net buyers of it. And I think another thing that's going to come into play that isn't being discussed at the moment, but I found quite interesting, not that I want to run back into the mining and metals industry and work again, but now yet again, exploration by mining companies, particularly gold mining companies, has fallen sharply yet again. And, you know, supply and demand is kind of like battleships. They don't turn on a dime. And we've seen now production among gold mining companies considerably drop these last few years at a time when I think we're just about to see a significant pickup in investment demand. So, again, I just continue to see a series of fundamental reasons to support gold, starting with the fact that when it they had a chance to take it down and keep it down, they couldn't do it. And like I said, to the boxing analogy, when you're supposed to knock somebody out and you bang them around and they're still standing in the ring, it's kind of like the football team that, you know, shouldn't have been in the game. Suddenly in the fourth quarter, they start driving, and before you know it, they take the lead. And that's kind of what I see gold happening now for the rest of 2007.
Isn't that ironic? Because here we had one of the best Super Bowls I've ever seen, you know, with the Falcons and the Patriots. And, you know, the Falcons, as our listeners know, were simply crushing. Patriots hardly had any points on the board. And then probably the greatest comeback I've ever seen, you know, the Patriots come back and win the game. I mean, it was a mathematical impossibility. No statistician would have put any odds on the comeback armchair quarterback. But I would argue that somebody told the Falcons to stop blitzing Brady. Because anyone who watched it recognized they were blitzing him 80% of the time on every single scrimmage. And all of a sudden, they stop blitzing the quarterback. And that was the end of the game, as far as I'm concerned. But all right, well, listen, as we wrap up here today, can you give us your outlook then on the mining sector? Of course, it was red hot last year, held up really well during the reaction. Do you expect more fireworks ahead for the sector?
I think at times silver will actually lead gold and vice versa. I think both metals are going to work their way higher. I think the mining shares, particularly the producers, are going to be benefactors of the minimally pullback in the equity market. I think it's going to be more than a pullback. I, for only maybe the third or fourth time in 30-something years, actually shorted the equity market, so I'm not looking for any, obviously, personal substantial gains. I think one of the benefactors is the mining. I also think the pullback in the oil market is interesting, and I think some of that money that had gone in and played that inside of the energy play is going to find its way into the metals market. I hate to say it because, you know, you kind of get scared when you are so bullish, but I really think it's almost the perfect storm now for both the metals and the mining sector, at least for the foreseeable future. I think into the spring and summer, we can definitely see a rise here, both the metals and the mining share. So I always like to have that physical bullion first. I understand why people speculate, which is another word for gambling, but in the mining sector. But I think once one has a core position in the physical metals, I think at this point in time, speculating in mining shares, particularly producers, I think is a worthy speculation at this time.
No, it's great advice. Money managers talk about diversification and, of course, the betas of the individual components. And that's one of the neat aspects of some of these companies. I mean, their betas are so negative relative to the underlying stock market that it has a tendency to greatly offset a lot of that portion of the risk in a portfolio. So there's a lot of people that are just equity minded today. If you are, wow, a battered but solid precious metals company might just be what you need to help. I'm not calling a top in equities, but every guest on here in the last 2 weeks has certainly been calling a top. My only problem with calling a top is I've listened to pundits call the top for 10 years in a row, it seems like.
I'd just like to add that I don't think anybody is gifted enough. I certainly wasn't to continuously call tops and bottoms, but I do think after you spend 30-something years in and around the financial arena as I have, you get a sixth sense, and I just would be very hard-pressed to take anyone that I cared for or even some poor widower and begin a general equity or bond portfolio at this time. And why that's important is one thing I've learned over 30-something years, which works almost all the time, is when you really can't even bring yourself to buy something, even with found money, then you have to start looking at the exit. I mean, you really do. And I couldn't begin to buy, certainly if my family, loved one's life depended on it, a general equity and bond portfolio at this point. I mean, look at the Bundesbond. I mean, you know, four-tenths of 1%. If I did anything there, I'm short there, or I'm not touching it. So yet, when I look at the bullion market, gold and silver, and the vast majority of major producers, I mean, I probably can't mention it by name, but I'll just say that I own a particular company that's today trading at book value in mining, has no debt, has a couple $100 million in cash. Analysts are talking about a world-class asset that it's developing, and yet I could buy it at book value. I can't find valuations like that in the general equity market, certainly not in the bond or the high-yield corporate bond market. So again, but just to sum up, I just think a lot of things have come together here to make the metals themselves and also significant producers very, very attractive at this time.
I mean, there's just, as you say, a confluence of events that makes the precious metals, you know, I think the ideal go-to asset here for everybody's portfolio. Of course, we're biased, having watched these markets for decades. You do really get a solid feel for what's happening, and you start to see signs of serious froth in the equities and the debt market. Can you tell folks a bit more about what they'll find at Peter Grandage & Company?
Well, Peter Grandage & Company specializes in retirement and business and estate planning. We all have a separate division that deals with professional athletes. And Peter Grandage, one word, Peter, and then grandich.com is the website. You'll see a section called Peter Speaks. That's my blog. You simply have to put in an email, and every time I write something on the blog, you'll receive an alert noting that whatever's been written will be sent to you. Thank you, sir. Talk to you soon.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity. Brazil Resources, based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves. Industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. There's lots of rancor in and amongst politicians, government agencies, and the media once again this week, as the Trump administration rolls out its proposed plans for budget cuts and budget expansions. In a nutshell, it appears three groups are proposed to get their purse strings expanded, including the Department of Defense by 9%, the Department of Homeland Security by 7%, and Veterans Affairs by 6%. Everyone else will need to take their belt in a few notches or get on one of those medically managed rapid weight loss programs. At the low end, NASA could lose 1%. The Justice and Treasury Departments could lose 4%. While on the high end, the EPA could lose 31% of its funding, the State Department could lose 29%, and the Ag Department could lose 21%. And there's plenty in between. Others don't fare as well. 19, to be specific, who are proposed to have their funding eliminated entirely. These range from the Chemical Safety Board, to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, to the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness. There's going to be plenty of arguing, plenty of political backstabbing, plenty of emotional appeals for the proposed cuts, and all will be well choreographed and presented. We may well have some kind of government shutdown. But guess what? We've been through numerous variations of this kind of horse trading ever since the staged shutdown between Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich in the 1990s. Before we get into any discussions and phony arguments about this budget bill, I'd like to see a full accounting and explanation of what has happened to the missing trillions of dollars that have seemingly evaporated and disappeared from our economy without a trace and have never been followed up on by the mainstream media, now lovingly referred to as fake news. If the mainstream media wants to begin redeeming themselves, they could begin by finding out and reporting on the missing $2 trillion reported by Donald Rumsfeld one day before 9/11. And then they could find out and report on what happened to the missing $16 trillion that Ben Bernanke and his team refused to discuss, that somehow vanished into the black hole of bailing out foreign entities. It would be nice to know exactly who those foreign entities are and precisely where they are located. Then there's the case of another $6.5 trillion that is unaccounted for by the Defense Department in an audit report of the Office of Inspector General on a July 26, 2016 entry on their own website. These are massive amounts of money that remain unaccounted for. They are in excess of our acknowledged federal debt, which is nearing $20 trillion. These missing sums are so gigantic, they could actually be bankrolling another shadow United States or other country somewhere. Until real answers are generated about the missing trillions of dollars over the past decade and a half, any debates, arguments, and posturing over trivial cuts and budget realignments are once again meaningless. Let's cut to the chase and get down to business. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week. The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice. GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.